Hello, everyone, and welcome to the second hour of the Arizona Republic, the Tuesday, October 7th, 2025 edition, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. My name is Chuck Berry. I'm your Sun Sounds volunteer reader. During the next hour, I'll be covering the obituaries, the local business and sports news, some opinions, and end up possibly with the almanac, but certainly with the horoscope and the comics. So I hope you enjoy the program today. I'll begin with the obituaries. Julia Vega C. Lala, 92, of Florence. Judith Norley, 85, of Scottsdale. And Sharon Jane Poston, 87, of Cave Creek. And those are the obituaries for today. Next up is the business news. The first article is titled, Foreign Investors Eye Cheaper Dollar Hedges. Resumption of Fed's Cutting to Lower Costs. Written by Laura Matthews and Sahib Abbal Ahmed of Reuters. The long-awaited resumption of the Federal Reserve's rate-cutting cycle is likely to cheapen hedging of dollar exposure for foreign investors and increase their motivation to guard more of their U.S. assets against further currency weakness. In September, the U.S. Central Bank lowered interest rates by an expected 25 basis points to 4 to 4.25% on labor market concerns and indicated more cuts would follow later this year. That cut narrows the interest rate differential between the United States and other developed countries, which helps to lower the hedging costs for foreign pensions, sovereign funds, and other institutional investors, managers and analysts said. The ICE U.S. dollar index is down about 10% this year, partially driven by foreign investors increasing hedging activity on worries about the impact of U.S. trade and tariff policies on their U.S. assets, market participants said. There are some people that are watching it, that have been waiting for the resumption of the cutting cycle by the Fed, said Van Loo, global head of solutions strategy for fixed income and foreign exchange for Russell Investments in London. Now they are inclined to raise the hedge ratio, and they're waiting for the right moment, or they're waiting for some kind of catalyst. Hedging is a way to limit losses on an existing portfolio by using financial instruments such as derivatives to create an offsetting position. Since it often involves selling dollars via forwards or swaps, any rise in hedging activity can spell additional weakness for the beleaguered greenback. High hedging costs and a bullish view on the buck were two major factors suppressing FX hedging ratios in recent years, according to a June report from the Bank for International Settlements. Years of dollar strength meant foreign investors could leave U.S. assets unhedged, since it boosted their overall returns and was a source of diversification. Now that's set to change. With the greenback down significantly this year, and with more potential weakness on the horizon, hedging could help blunt the hurt from unfavorable FX moves. Markets are pricing in about 2 more quarter-point rate cuts this year, which could incentivize investors who want to ramp up their hedges, but have found the cost to do so a deterrent. Guarding against currency swings. Foreigners currently have more than $30 trillion invested in U.S. stocks and bonds, according to Morgan Stanley, $8 trillion of which is held by European investors. Rising concerns over Fed leadership its independence and U.S. policy uncertainty have helped keep pressure on the dollar, even as U.S. stocks have rallied. The S&P 500 is up about 14% for the year, near a record high. The strong gains in U.S. stock market and the very sharp U.S. dollar falls are unusual, but they're not unheard of. We think an increase in hedging is part of the reason for this divergence, said Steve Dooley, head of market insights at Convera in Melbourne, Australia. A July research note from Deutsche Bank showed that equity investors in Germany and Austria have increased their hedge ratios to 60-70% from 20-30% at the start of the year. A new report from the Danish Central Bank showed that insurance companies and pension funds are shielding more than three-quarters of their dollar investments from currency swings. The Deutsche note stated that some high-profile pension funds plan to top out those ratios after the summer. I think foreign investors are still inclined to hedge away their dollar exposure, said Thierry Wiseman, global FX and rates strategist at Macquarie. So they will come out again at some point in the next few weeks. You're going to see another round of dollar hedging by foreign institutions, he said. Research from Miltech also shows that 86% of European corporates are currently hedging their forecastable currency risk, up from 67% in 2023, with their mean hedge ratio rising to 49% from 43%. Joseph Hoffman, chief executive officer at Misero Currency Management, said the shift among international investors is not mainly about short-term interest rates advantages, but is driven more by a bearish structural view on the dollar rooted in the Fed's policy, heightened political uncertainty, and persistent fiscal deficits. Still, a lower cost of hedging will likely draw those investors who may have held off boosting hedges due to price considerations. For instance, the 4% annual hedging cost for investors in Japan and Switzerland, based on current interest rates, remains a big hurdle. It costs other euro-based investors around 2% annually. I think there's like a psychological level that if the hedge cost goes to 1% or below, which is on the horizon for EUR investors over the next 12 months, people wouldn't worry about it as such, said Russell's Liu. That completes the article titled Foreign Investors Eye Cheaper Dollar Hedges by Laura Matthews and Saqib Abal Ahmed from Reuters. The next article involves Amazon. The title is Amazon Launches Private Label, Many Shoppers Turning to Lower Cost Options. It's by Mike Snyder of USA Today. Amazon is launching its own private label brand, Amazon Grocery, in a move to challenge Costco and Walmart in the growing cost-conscious sales competition. Shoppers have continued to opt for more private label or store brands over name brands, with private label brands accounting for about 1 out of every 4 grocery products purchased in the United States last year, according to the Private Label Manufacturers Association. Amazon, which has already been selling its own Amazon Fresh and Happy Belly brand products on Amazon.com, and in Amazon Fresh stores, said consumers purchased 15% more private brand products in 2024 compared to the previous year. That also includes the 365 brand items sold at Whole Foods Market, the company said in a news release. Amazon Fresh and Happy Belly branded products will carry the Amazon grocery label, which includes more than 1,000 items such as milk, produce, meat, and seafood. With Amazon Grocery, we're simplifying how customers discover and shop our extensive private label food selection while maintaining the quality and value our customers expect and deserve. Jason Bouchel, Vice President of Amazon Worldwide Grocery Stores and CEO at Whole Foods Market, said in a statement. Several new items will be added with the launch of Amazon Grocery, including fresh bakery cinnamon rolls and refrigerated pizza dough. Also on the way, new frozen pasta meals, pie fillings, granola, sliced loaf cakes, a deli meat selection, canned beans, and frozen vegetables. Amazon's move may not be as big as Aldi's recent plan to put its name on nearly every product and create its own Aldi original brand, or Walmart's Better Goods private food brand launch last year, said Sky Canavese, principal analyst for retail and e-commerce for research firm eMarketer. But it does fit into this trend of retailers wanting to put their names front and center on their private label brands, because that can help build more brand affinity and more consumer loyalty, she told USA Today. Private label brands such as Costco's Kirkland Signature brand continue to attract more shoppers. Recent research from Nielsen IQ found that 31% of 1,005 consumers surveyed in June said they were switching to private label products more often. Overall, private label products accounted for 18.5% of all consumer packaged goods sales, Nielsen IQ found. Rising prices may lead shoppers to opt for private label products, which can be 20% cheaper than the name brand product, Canavese said. When you are in a store and making that decision, seeing the much lower price can certainly generate a change in purchases, and I think online that works as well, she said. And that ends the article, Amazon Launches Private Label, by Mike Snyder of USA Today. Our last article from the business section is titled Champagne Makers Banking on Quality. Industry looks to this year's crop for rebound, by Sibeli D. Lahamed of Reuters. Favorable weather has improved the quality of champagne grapes this year, producers said on October 2nd, providing good news at a time of fading demand for the French sparkling wine. In July, the industry decided to cut this year's grape harvest by 10% after a 12% cut the previous year. The reductions were aimed at addressing falling demand amid a global decline in alcohol consumption, economic uncertainty, and concerns over President Donald Trump's tariffs. Grape picking is over in Champagne, as in other French wine regions, and this year's vintage looks to be a good one. We were lucky to have good weather in the right place at the right time, Maxime Tubar, chairman of Champagne Growers Group SGV, told reporters. Sales volumes of champagne, typically a mix of several years' harvests, fell 1.8% in the first 8 months of 2025 to 145 million bottles, the SGV said. However, exports edge up by 0.2% over the same period, after dropping by more than 10% last year. We sense a slowdown in the decline, though optimism remains limited, Tubar said. Exports had increased in the first months of the year as U.S. importers built up supplies ahead of tariffs on European Union wine. The U.S. tariffs highlight the need for champagne makers to find new markets, producers said. Trade deals between the EU and South American bloc Mercosur, as well as India, would help create new opportunities, they said. And that completes the article, Champagne Makers Banking on Quality, by Sibeli de la Hamide of Reuters. And that completes the business news for today. Next up is the local sports scene. The lead article on the front page of the sports section involves our Phoenix Cardinals. Titans 22, Cardinals 21, Sunday. And the title is Ugly Fold, Cards in the Muck. Five takeaways as Cardinals fumble away win versus Titans. It's by Theo Mackey of the Arizona Republic and the USA Today Network. The stakes were clear for the Arizona Cardinals entering Week 5. A win was mandatory. As far as the standings go, moving to a 2-3 would not be a death knell, but losing to a 0-4 Tennessee Titans team, the worst in football after a month of play, at home, after two consecutive divisional losses, with a sputtering offense? Considering the preseason expectations, that defeat would mark the low point of Jonathan Gannon's tenure. It would amplify the questions, those familiar ones about where do they go from here. Then the Cardinals went up, 21-3. They were in complete command, again against the worst team in the NFL. And somehow they still lost, 22-21. Take all those pregame assumptions about a defeat and multiply them by 10. Then factor in how they lost. May as well multiply all of it by 100. This was, in the often miserable 38 seasons since the Cardinals moved to the desert, perhaps the most inexplicable loss the franchise has ever seen. Here are some key takeaways from a stunning afternoon at State Farm Stadium. How on earth? Let's recap how this happened. The Cardinals went up 21-3 within the first 20 minutes. They were finally on track for a dominant win, the type of performance that could quiet the questions surrounding this team, even against the Titans. Then their offense disappeared, marred by all sorts of procedural issues up front. Those frustrations put an end to the good vibes, but the win? That was never in doubt. Entering the fourth quarter, the Cardinals still led 21-6. Turns out that was only the start. With 12:40 remaining, Emery DeMarcado seemingly sealed the game with a 72-yard touchdown run, until he celebrated too early, fumbling through the back of the end zone. The gate was open, if only slightly. It would have been a 3-score game, Kyler Murray said. Game probably over. It definitely gave them a sense of life, hope, which you can't give teams in the NFL. The roller coaster, as it turned out, was just beginning. After a quick Titans touchdown drive, the Cardinals caught another break when Joey Sly missed the extra point, preserving their 2-possession lead. It served as a nice reminder that both teams were trying to give this game away in equal parts. The Cardinals, though, weren't going to let anyone match their philanthropy. Not on this day. Their next act was almost impossible to believe. With 4:39 to play, Dadrion Tyler Demerson intercepted Cam Ward in the red zone, again seemingly securing the win. But as he went to ground, he fumbled the ball, watched a teammate kick it into the end zone, and saw Tyler Lockett pounce on for a mind-boggling touchdown. Still, the Cardinals had a chance to ice the game on offense, but facing 3rd and 8 in their own territory, they decided to run the ball, ceding possession as a raucous stream of boos rained down. The only relatively normal aspect of the collapse was the end, as the Titans methodically marched 73 yards in 10 plays, setting up the Cardinals' third loss by walk-off field goal in as many weeks. "Why did it have to be close?" left tackle Paris Johnson said. "Even if this was a win, why do we have to be close? With this being a loss, that's the thing that we're allowing to happen, putting the ball in other people's hands." The Cardinals beat themselves with sloppiness. After the Cardinals went up 21-3, their next 8 drives each featured at least one negative play, either a sack, a penalty, or turnover. The Cardinals could not get out of their own way, with the most notable example coming on a red zone fumble. Because of a miscommunication up front, Murray wasn't ready for the snap, which hit off his face mask, giving the Titans their easiest takeaway of the season. The play that Gannon chose to highlight came on the first snap after Murray briefly went to the locker room with a foot injury. Facing 3rd and 9, the Cardinals lined up in an illegal formation, and had an ineligible man downfield. Somehow they still had no open receivers, forcing Murray to throw his pass into the dirt. "We gotta do a better job there," Gannon said. "Day one install. Get lined up where we need to. Get lined up so we can get off the play, and we're not all discombobulated. So it ultimately falls on me to coach better, so our guys know exactly what to do on a day one install play." The Cardinals committed 11 penalties in the game, 8 accepted, with the majority falling on the offensive line. That group was flagged for 2 false starts, 2 holdings, 1 illegal formation, and 1 ineligible man downfield. DeMercado also committed a hold, and the punt protection unit was called for another illegal formation. "It's on me," Gannon said. "I gotta go back to my drawing board and do a better job, because it's unacceptable." Gannon, though, said that he still feels good about the offensive coaching staff, which includes maligned offensive coordinator Drew Petzing. "We have spurts in games that we can do whatever we want right now," Gannon said. "We've just got to put it together for 4 quarters." Lack of aggression was a death knell. For the 4th time in 5 weeks, the Cardinals' offense had a chance to seal the win on its terms. And for the 4th time in 5 weeks, the Cardinals ceded the ball back to their opponent, keeping a game alive. In their first 2 games, they escaped anyway, but in Week 3 against the 49ers, and now in Week 5 against the Titans, that wastefulness has come back to cost Arizona. This may have been the most egregious example yet. With a new set of downs on their own 33-yard line, the Cardinals elected to run on all 3 plays, including a 3rd and 8 with 2:12 left. Because the 2-minute warning was looming, a run cost the Panthers a mere 12 seconds compared to an incomplete pass, while essentially conceding possession. You give the ball back to the other team with 2 minutes, whatever it was left. Yeah, there's a chance you're going to lose the game, Murray said. Even Gannon, typically a staunch advocate of Petzing, did not sound pleased with the play call, although he acknowledged he had a role in any decision. Did we put them in the best chance to gain a first down there? Gannon said. I don't know. We've got to look at it. Will Hernandez made his impact felt. One key turning point in the game, right guard Will Hernandez hitting his snap limit. Per the CBS broadcast, the Cardinals entered the day planning to use Hernandez in a limited fashion, as he made his return after missing a year with a torn ACL. On the 4 drives he played, the Cardinals averaged 7.9 yards per play and scored 21 points. For the rest of the game, the Cardinals averaged 4.5 yards per play and scored 0 points. That change was, of course, not all down to the performance of Hernandez's replacement, John Gaines II. But the Cardinals' entire offensive operation cratered after Hernandez departed. They stopped creating holes in the running game. They stopped giving Murray time to push the ball downfield. They started committing far too many penalties, including the pre-snap violations that Jonathan Gannon describes as non-negotiables. And they ended with a loss that marked a new low point in Gannon's tenure. Defense wasn't blameless. For all the concern over the Cardinals' offensive performance, the defense played its part in the collapse. In the fourth quarter, it allowed the Titans to gain 212 yards on 25 plays. This is now the third time in as many weeks that the defense has allowed an opposing offense to drive for a walk-off field goal. Those are difficult situations, especially when the offense is consistently putting its defense on the field. But the Cardinals invested significant resources in their defense this offseason to make it an impact unit. Through 5 weeks, it's merely been average. Collectively, we have to do a better job, Gannon said, and it feels like that's now 3 games in a row that I'm saying the same thing. But until we do a better job, we're going to keep losing. And that's the end of that article. The title was Ugly Fold, Cards in the Muck, by Theo Mackey of the Arizona Republic and the USA Today Network. I'm going to take a brief moment out of the broadcast to remind those of you who may have tuned in late, this is the second hour of the Arizona Republic, the Tuesday, October 7th, 2025 issue, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. My name is Chuck Berry. I'm your Sun Sounds volunteer reader. Next, I'll move to the Phoenix Mercury. Aces teach Mercury a costly lesson about WNBA finals, by Nancy Armour, a columnist for USA Today. The Las Vegas Aces didn't just win Game 2 of the WNBA finals, they cut the heart and soul out of the Phoenix Mercury's title hopes. Whatever chance the Mercury had of winning the 2025 championship, or at least keeping the Aces honest, evaporated after the first quarter, Sunday at Michelob Ultra Arena in Las Vegas. Phoenix couldn't capitalize on its big leads, first 7 points and then 8, letting Las Vegas back in each time. Then the Aces stars started cooking, and the Mercury had no answer. The second quarter, when Aja Wilson single-handedly outscored Phoenix, that third when Jackie Young popped off for 21, that's how titles are won. When you get an edge on your opponent, you jam your foot on the gas and you don't take it off. That's the goal, to not let up, Aces coach Becky Hammond said after her team took a 2-0 lead in the best-of-seven series with their 91-78 dismantling of Phoenix. You just don't want to have a satisfied locker room because we're not there yet, Hammond said. We did what we're supposed to do. But it's the way Las Vegas did it that will give Phoenix sleepless nights in the off-season. No on-the-job training. The finals are a different beast, even from other playoff series. The Aces knew that intimately the core of their teams that won back-to-back titles in 2022 and 23 are still here. They know you can't give the other team openings, or you might never recover. They know, too, that if you get one of those openings, you have to take advantage of it. And then some. After the Mercury dominated the opening minutes of the game, Las Vegas's defense started clicking. A defensive rebound became a layup for Wilson. A steal became a step-back jumper. An offensive rebound became a putback. Within a few possessions, the game had gone sideways for Phoenix, and they were never able to get it back. I thought we were pretty stagnant offensively, Mercury coach Nate Tibbetts said. We tried to force it a little bit ourselves and tried to go get it. That's part of us just trying to figure it out as a group. There isn't time for that in the finals. You have to find an answer in the moment, or you're going to be roadkill. That's what Las Vegas did in Game 1. Young had, as Hammond said, no legs, no lift Friday night. Wilson had 21 points, but 7 came at the free throw line. So how did the Aces win that one? They got monster efforts from Dana Evans and Jewel Lloyd. You figure it out. You get other people involved. You change up your schemes. You do whatever you have to, or this window will be gone. Even our whole year, the process is always equipping you for what's coming next. I think they really embraced that, Hammond said. It takes a special group to embrace hard. But the Aces know what the reward is when they do. Hard work pays off. Wilson, Young, and Chelsea Gray might not have a monster collective effort like this in Game 3. Young had 32 points and 8 rebounds Sunday, while Wilson had a double-double with 28 and 14. Gray had 10 assists, 8 rebounds, 3 steals, and 3 blocks to go with her 10 points. If they don't, though, the Aces know how to adjust. They know how to weather storms. They know how to go to Plan B. They know how to respond. They know how to win at this time of year. We just have to play the game that's in front of us, Wilson said. We don't look at the series as just the numbers. We look at it as this is another opportunity for us to play basketball the right way. Going into Phoenix, that's the same mindset we're going to have. We've been through a lot, she added. We can't stop here. We can't be satisfied. It is not easy to win a championship. It takes a relentlessness and a commitment like no other time, be it in the regular season or even the playoffs. The Aces know this. The Mercury are learning it the hard way. And that completes the article. Aces teach Mercury a costly lesson about WNBA finals by Nancy Armour, a columnist for the USA Today. The next article is new Suns guard super close to returning from leg injury by Dwayne Rankin of the Arizona Republic and the USA Today Network. The Phoenix Suns will head to China on Monday, October 6th, for 2 games against the Brooklyn Nets in Macau, with Jalen Green working his way back from a left hamstring strain. It's definitely progressing, Suns coach Jordan Ott said October 5th about Green's injury. It's progressing in the right place. With soft tissue, you never know exactly where we're at, but every day has been better. We'll continue to reassess in China. Green didn't play in the preseason opener on Friday, October 3rd, against the Los Angeles Lakers in Palm Desert, but got in a pregame workout of dribbling, shooting, and movement. The former Houston Rockets guard played in all 82 regular season games the past two seasons. The Suns landed Green in the Kevin Durant trade before the 2025 draft. I think he's super close to returning, Suns guard Jared Butler said, October 5th. The Suns leave Phoenix for what they say will be a 17-hour, 7,500-mile flight to China for a week-long stay that ends with two games in 3 days, October 10th and October 12th, versus the Nets. Get out of the States, Suns star Devin Booker said October 3rd. Long flight together, so we're going to get some good team bonding, some quality time. Take this show on the road. The Suns have an extensive plan for the flight that considers the 15-hour time differential, as Macau is ahead in time to Phoenix. Because there is such a time change, and it's weird, the team and our health and performance staff have put together a cool schedule of food timing, sleep timing, Suns guard Grayson Allen said. When to sleep during the flight? When you force yourself to be awake so that we can try to adjust a little bit easier, I think we have designated lights on, lights off times. Phoenix won its preseason opener 103-81 over the Lakers, who were without LeBron James and Luka Doncic. Booker scored 24 points, while Allen and Dylan Brooks shot a combined 6 of 10 from 3 in scoring 13 and 10 points, respectively. I liked the way we played, Booker said. A lot of carryover from training camp. It's nice to see it versus another team. Butler added 12 off the bench. Guys were setting me up well, said Butler, who is on a non-guaranteed Exhibit 9 contract with the Suns. I felt like our offense had a good continuity. New Suns big Mark Williams and Green, two projected starters, didn't play Friday, but Booker has built chemistry with his new backcourt mate during camp. He's been on a few heaters in camp, Booker said about Green. He didn't miss many shots. Anything for us surrounding him to make it easier, to allow us both to be more efficient and being able to score and at the same time create for others. Williams has participated in all facets of camp outside of live 5-on-5. The Suns have had him on an intentional plan since July 1st with a major focus on building strength, particularly his lower body. Weight room, everything with the team, install plays, defensive drills, all that, Williams said on October 3rd. I'm in a good place. They have a plan in place for me to be ready for opening night. Just doing everything in my power to be able to endure a full season. So I'm excited for that. Williams added that he's playing opening night when the Suns begin the 2025-26 season, October 22nd, against the Sacramento Kings at Mortgage Matchup Center. I'll be ready for that, he said. It's still unclear whether Williams will see any preseason action. With the Suns playing their final preseason game, October 14th at home, against the Lakers, after flying back from China the day before, Williams likely won't play in that rematch. It appears the window for him to play this preseason will be in China against the Nets. Day by day, he's out here working, Ott said. In a good place. The same thing. He's in all of our drills. It'll be the same piece. We'll see what happens in China. We are in China for a long time. Things can change. But he's still right on the plan. And that ends the article. The title was New Suns Guard Super Close to Returning from Leg Injury. And that was by Dwayne Rankin of the Arizona Republic and the USA Today Network. Next is the opinion section of the broadcast, and we have only one in today's paper. That's by Abigail Van Buren in her Dear Abby column. Wedding invitation comes with an unexpected condition. Dear Abby, I have a special needs son and cannot travel with him alone. I have also been in a committed relationship for 2 years. When my aunt's youngest daughter got married last year, I clearly stated that I would not be able to attend because of these limitations. Now her son is getting married. The family sent out an electronic invitation and asked for a plus one. Since my son will be with my parents during the wedding, I filled it out with my name and my partner's name. I was recently told that the plus one was meant only for my son, and that I'm not allowed to bring my partner, despite the fact that he'll be helping to support me during the trip. I find this incredibly disrespectful. Not only are my boundaries being ignored, but so are my son's needs. I'm considering not attending. Would it be wrong to decline the invitation on those grounds? I'd like to tell them exactly why I won't be in attendance. I've had enough of being told to accommodate others at the expense of my own family's well-being. Signed, Hurt in the Midwest. Dear Hurt, by now your aunt and her family should be well aware that your son is severely disabled. Do your aunt's soon-to-be in-laws know? Are your parents expected to shoulder all responsibility for his care when that wedding takes place? Does your family know that your boyfriend helps you take care of your son? If the answer to these questions is yes, then what you received was less a wedding invitation than it was a bid for a gift. Send them your regrets, but do it politely. Dear Abby, my husband and I married 3 years ago. We both had lost our spouses to cancer. He had a house, and I had a house, so since mine was paid for, I talked him into moving into mine and renting his so his renters could pay his mortgage. That way he could save more for retirement. My dilemma is, it seems like I pay for everything. He gives me $400 a month for his half of the utilities, phone, and groceries. But with things so expensive, I end up paying the difference, and it's draining my savings and checking account. I love him, and he adores me, but this is starting to wear on me. I can talk to him about anything, but money seems to be a sore spot with him, and I wouldn't want to ruin everything else that is great. How can I approach this with him without it affecting our relationship? I've hinted to him how expensive things are, but he hasn't taken the hints. Signed, Going Broke in Indiana. Dear Going Broke, stop hinting and speak up. Tell your husband that because of inflation and the price of everything going up, your savings and checking accounts are being drained. Then tell him the two of you need to start discussing a more realistic budget. If he loves you, he will see the wisdom. However, if money is more important to him than your welfare, it is better to find out now. That completes the article. You can contact Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com, that's with a capital D and a capital A, or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. The title of her article was Wedding Invitation Comes with an Unexpected Condition. And that's it for the opinion section. It looks like we'll have time for a look at the almanac today. Today in history. Today is Tuesday, October 7th, the 280th day of 2025. There are 85 days left in the year. On this date in history, 1765, the Stamp Act Congress convened in New York City, with representatives from 9 colonies meeting to protest the British Stamp Act, which imposed the first direct tax by the British Crown upon the American colonies. In 1949, the German Democratic Republic, also known as East Germany, was officially established during the Cold War. It was dominated by the USSR until the fall of the Berlin Wall in 1989, leading to Germany's reunification in October 1990. In 2001, the United States launched Operation Enduring Freedom in Afghanistan with airstrikes against Al-Qaeda and the Taliban, marking the start of the U.S.-led war on terrorism following the 9/11 attacks. In 2008, popular music streaming service Spotify was publicly launched. Those come to us from Susan Job of the USA Today Network. And here are today's celebrity birthdays. Author Thomas Keneally turns 90. TV host Joy Behar, 83. Writer Diane Ackerman, 77. Singer John Mellencamp, 74. Politician Vladimir Putin, 73. Actor Dylan Baker, 66. Producer Simon Cowell, 66. Syndicated columnist Dan Savage, 61. Author filmmaker Sherman Alexie, 59. Singer Tony Braxton, 58. Singer Tom York of Radiohead, 57. Actor Nicole Ari Parker, 55. Actor Allison Munn, 51. Actor-composer Tim Minchin, 50. Actor Omar Benson Miller, 47. Actors Sean and Aaron Ashmore, 46. Actor Amber Stevens West, 39. And actor Nicole Maines, 28. Those were brought to us from the USA Today Network. Next up is the horoscope. I'll begin with Aries, March 21st to April 19th, inviting another's wrath. Snooping in someone's business lands you in hot water. Taurus, April 20th to May 20th. Do you know who you're up against? You're willing to negotiate today, but those at the top are not. Gemini, May 21st to June 21st. You want to do things your way, the right way. Digging in your heels invites trouble. Cancer, June 22nd to July 22nd. Spilling secrets? Read the room. How you communicate a message matters. Leo, July 23rd to August 22nd. Defending your point by any means necessary? Reconsider the lengths you'll go to be right. Virgo, August 23rd to September 22nd. Looking for a life hack? As Mercury and Pluto clash, research is your strong suit. Implementation? Not so much. Libra, September 23rd to October 23rd. Defending your decisions or values? Unasked for criticism registers as especially brutal. Scorpio, October 24th to November 21st. Refuting a hurtful accusation? Try not to obsess over it. You've got a short fuse as Mercury and Pluto clash. Sagittarius, November 22nd to December 21st. Rehashing the past? Information comes to light that alters your recollection of events. Capricorn, December 22nd to January 19th. You have the solution. Then why isn't everyone following your lead? Don't push your point while Mercury and Pluto clash. Aquarius, January 20th to February 18th. As Mercury clashes with Pluto, you're determined to call the shots, but others won't take it well. And lastly, Pisces, February 19th to March 20th. Courting controversy? Winning an argument might not be the best way to prove what you know today. And that is the horoscope for Tuesday, October the 7th, 2025. I'll close out today's broadcast with a look at a few of the comics. I'll begin with Jim Davis's Garfield. Garfield is standing there looking a little glum, and he's thinking, cheating on your diet is bad. The next scene, he's throwing a pie in his mouth, and then he's looking into a mirror with a Cheshire-shire grin on his face, and he's saying, bad Garfield, bad kitty. Next up is Peanuts by Charles Schulz. The scene is Linus is standing there with his blanket, and a little girl is talking to him. The little girl says, why do you carry that blanket around? Linus answers, it's hard to explain. The little girl says, may I try it? And Linus says, I guess so. She handles the blanket and says, it feels nice. And then she assumes the same pose that Linus does with his blanket, with the blanket, and she says, how do I look? Next, we have Blondie by Dean Young and John Marshall. Dagwood is sitting in his favorite chair with the dog lounging behind him. He's watching television, and he's clicking through the channels. From the television comes, new from the people who brought you, The Price is Right. It's The Wife is Right. And Blondie says, what? And Dagwood says, huh? The television then says, one lucky husband will guess why his wife is right and maybe win a brand new car. And Blondie says, wait, honey, I want to record season one. And Dagwood is saying, this is going to be a long season. Here's Beetle Bailey by Greg, Brian, and Neil Walker. The scene is the secretary has a photographer photographing the general and the lieutenant standing together. The secretary says, let's get a shot of you two together for the article. He obviously takes the picture. The general talks to the photographer and says, "I want you to Photoshop him out." That's while the secretary is taking a note from the lieutenant, and he's saying that's fuzz, F-U-Z-Z. Here's Pickles today. Earl and his wife are sitting at the dinner table. Earl said, "I read an interesting fact the other day." And the next scene has him simply eating, not saying a word. And his wife says, "And?" Earl says, "And I wish I could remember what it was." And his wife puts her hand on her forehead in unbelief. Here's Ziggy by Tom Wilson and Tom II. It shows Ziggy walking out of the Library of Congress. He said, "I was surprised the Books for Dummies section wasn't bigger." The Family Circus by Bill and Jeff Keane has the little boy looking up to his mother saying, "Mommy, why don't you God bless me when I sneeze, instead of saying, cover your mouth?" And lastly, Dennis the Menace by H. Ketchum. Dennis and a buddy are walking away from Margaret, and Dennis says to his buddy, "I left Margaret speechless. That's a first." And that's it for the comics today, and that also completes the broadcast today. You've been listening to the second hour of the Arizona Republic, the Tuesday, October 7th, 2025 issue, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. My name is Chuck Berry. It's been my privilege to be your Sun Sounds volunteer reader. I hope you enjoyed the program today. Thank you so much for spending your time with me today.